So we continue on with the next section, on the Dhammanupassana Satipatthana, and it's the six internal and external bases, the ayatana. And I thought I would read the just the overview or the from the Satipatthana Sutta, just to remind us where we are, what that is. we've been stuck in the khandhas for quite a while now. Just remember what Satipatthana is. Okay, so again, because a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects. Although that Bhikkhu Bodhi is translating it as phenomena these days. In terms of the six internal and external bases, and how does a bhikkhu abide contemplating mind objects in terms of the six internal and external bases? Here, bhikkhu understands the eye. He understands forms, and he understands the fetter that arises dependent on both. And he also understands how there comes to be the arising of the unarisen fetter, and how there comes to be the abandoning of the arisen fetter, and how there comes to be the future non-arising of the abandoned fetter. He understands the ear, he understands sounds, he understands the nose, he understands odors. He understands the tongue. He understands flavors. He understands the body. He understands tangibles. He understands the mind. He understands mind objects. And he understands the fetter that arises dependent on both. And he also understands how there comes to be the arising of the unarisen fetter, and how there comes to be the abandoning of the arisen fetter, and how there comes to be the future non-arising of the abandoned fetter. In this way, he abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects, internally, externally, and both internally and externally. Or else he abides contemplating mind objects, the nature of arising, abides contemplating in mind objects the nature of vanishing, or he abides contemplating in mind objects the nature of both arising and vanishing. Or else mindfulness that there are mind objects is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness, and he abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects in terms of the six internal and external bases. So yeah, just as a a recollection of that that framework, and as we move away from the khandhas and into the ayatana, the sense bases, there's a I think it's helpful to recollect that there's a kind of a generalized function in the sense of there's different purposes of both, in that the five khandhas tends to lean towards understanding and relinquishment of attachment to. Attachment to self, as that it tends to happen in terms of in relation to the in terms of the khandhas of the form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, that sense of a sense of I, a sense of mind, a sense of belonging to me, a sense of selfhood. Tends to arise more strongly in relationship to the khandhas, and the ayatanas tends to the purpose is more to the relinquishing of desire, in that desire attachment, tanha upadana, tends to arise more in relationship to the senses and internal senses and the external senses, the objects of attention. So that, and of course, that's just a broad brush, and is not the nature of the, I say, the perverse nature of the mind is such that we'll form sense of self and desire and attachment toward anything, actually, but as a general theme, as a perspective of how the Buddha sees this as useful, then to recognize that when we're with this, working with the internal and external sense bases, that we're probably paying more close attention to the nature of desire, and that is also when the Buddha says he understands the eye, understands forms, understands the fetter that arises dependent on both, that understanding how the comes to be the arising of the unarisen fetter, how the abandoning of the arisen fetter, that the fetter there is not, there's a word that is usually translated as fetter, the sangyojana, and that I don't think is the direct meaning in this case. Ten fetters are starting from Sakkaya Ditti through to Avijja. The first three fetters are relinquished by the stream enterer. The next two are weakened by the once return of the next two of sense desire and aversion are relinquished by the non-returner, and then the last five are relinquished by the arahant. And those are fetters, but I don't think that's the general meaning in this sense. I think there's a better explanation of the in terms of fetter from this, and because that structure tends to be more commonly used in the commentarial literature, so that if we go to the into the sutta structure, then there's probably a better explanation, or a bit clearer, simpler. I think sometimes the simpler explanation is sometimes the more useful or predominant. Probably Occam's razor is in this. Is a good application in this. So anyway, there's a sutta in, surprisingly enough, in the Salayatana Samhita. So that's 35 of the Samhita 35. This is Sutta 232. And it's another conversation between Sariputta and Mahakutita, and these are two friends who get together and have conversations from time to time, and many of them have been recorded. On one occasion, the Venerable Sariputta and the Venerable Mahakutita were dwelling at Bharanasi in the deer park at Isipatana. Then in the evening, the Venerable Mahakutita emerged from seclusion and approached the Venerable Sariputta. He engaged greetings with the Venerable Sariputta, and when they had concluded their greetings and cordial talk, he sat down to one side and said to him, "How is it, friend Sariputta? Is the eye the fetter of forms, or are forms the fetter of the eye? Is the ear the fetter of sounds, or are the sounds, are sounds the fetter of the ear? And of course, it goes through the six sense bases. Is the mind the fetter of mental phenomena, or are mental phenomena the fetter of the mind? Friend Kotita, the eye is not the fetter of forms, nor are forms the fetter of the eye, but rather the desire and lust that arise there in dependence on both, that is the fetter there. The ear is not the fetter of sounds, nor are sounds the fetter of the ear, but rather the desire and lust that arise there in dependence on both, that is the fetter there. And through the sense bases, the mind is not the fetter of mental phenomena, nor are mental phenomena the fetter of the mind, but rather the desire and lust that arise there in dependence on both, that is the fetter there. Suppose, friend, a black ox and a white ox were yoked together by a single harness or yoke. Would one be speaking rightly if one were to say, the black ox is the fetter of the white ox is the fetter of the black ox? No, friend. The black ox is not the fetter of the white ox, nor is the white ox the fetter of the black ox, but rather the single harness or yoke by which the two are yoked together. That is the fetter there. So too, friend, the eye is not the fetter of forms. Forms are not the fetter of the eye, so on, nor are mind the fetter of mental phenomena, or mental phenomena the fetter of mind, but rather the desire and lust that arise there in dependence on both, that is the fetter there. If, friend, the eye were the fetter of forms, or if forms were the fetter of the eye, this living of the holy life could not be discerned for the complete destruction of suffering. But since the eye is not the fetter of forms, nor are the forms the fetter of the eye, but rather the desire and lust that arise there in dependence on both is the fetter there, the living of the holy life is discerned for the complete destruction of suffering. If, friend, at the ear were the fetter of sounds, or if sounds were the fetter of the ear, if the mind were the fetter of mental phenomena, or if the mental phenomena were the fetter of mind, this living of the holy life could not be discerned for the complete destruction of suffering. But since the mind is not the fetter of mental phenomena, nor are mental phenomena the fetter of the mind, but rather the desire and lust that arise there in dependence on both is the fetter there, the living of the holy life is discerned for the complete destruction of suffering. In this way too, friend, it may be understood how that is so. There exists in the Blessed One the eye. The Blessed One sees a form with the eye, yet there is no desire and lust in the Blessed One. The Blessed One is well liberated in mind. There exists in the Blessed One the ear. The Blessed One hears a sound with the ear. So on. There exists in the Blessed One the nose. The Blessed One smells an odor with the nose. There exists in the Blessed One the tongue. The Blessed One savors a taste with the tongue. There exists in the Blessed One the body. The Blessed One feels a tactile object with the body. There exists in the Blessed One the mind. The Blessed One cognizes a mental phenomenon with the mind. Yet there is no desire and lust in the Blessed One. The Blessed One is well liberated in mind. In this way, friend, it can be understood how the eye is not the fetter of forms, nor forms the fetter of the eye, but rather the desire and lust that arise there in dependence on both is the fetter there. How the ear is not the fetter of sounds, nor sounds the fetter of the ear, and so on. Through the senses, how the mind is not the fetter of mental phenomena, nor mental phenomena the fetter of the mind, but rather the desire and lust that arise there in dependence on both is the fetter there. So that's the desire and lust, chandaraga. Yeah, so that is the... the actual, say the fetter that arises, and that sense of the You know, if the eye were the fetter of forms, the forms were the fetter of the eye, in the sense that it came through the equipment, then we'd be scuppered. it would be, by virtue of fact of being born, then we'd be finished. That would be it. But because it's something that arises in the sense independence on that, it's an addition to that, that desire and lust that arises additionally to the perceiving and cognition of the senses, then we can work with that, we can deal with that, we can relinquish that, we can train the mind to be liberated. And that's really the theme that one takes through this whole section on the sense basis. Any questions on that before I continue?
Two questions.
Yeah.
The first one is that I'm wondering if this is equivalent to the notion of the gratification, the danger, and the escape.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's pretty much the same.
Yeah, yeah.
So this would be the fetter is the gratification, the danger, I guess.
That would be the danger. No, that's not true. It'd be the gratification as well.
It's also
same thing. They're in the sense that through the the gratification is the pleasure that arises from it. So that's the whole function of desire and lust, is get some gratification going.
And it's also
it's the fetter, and then there's usually some painful consequence that we hadn't really contemplated.
There's another place in the sutras where craving is likened to a seamstress who sews together the sense base and its And that's kind of equivalent to the notion of two oxen taking.
The oxen pulling that. The eye and forms and seamlessly pulling together knitting the two together so that it we get some kind of a desire or aversion going or something.
I guess the question is something like it seems almost like craving is. I presume creating a sense of continuity of phenomenon or something like that. It's hiding some aspect of.
In the sense that what becomes predominant is that the gratification becomes predominant as opposed to the perception of the impermanence or the unsatisfactory nature, so that the desire overrides the perception of truth or reality, so that and that's also where say like desire and ignorance are kind of they're working together, because that's the function of avijja also is to to not see the true nature of things.
Is in Yumi Samasakara like the scissors and cutting out the desires together and everything?
Yoni So Manasikara has a very, very strong function of wise attention, skillful reflection. Those are many translations for that, but that attending to things in a way that uncovers the drawback, the flaw, the assumptions that we have. Yes.
I'm not quite sure how to phrase this question, but I'll do my best. This is where we're exploring. You just explored the five khandhas, and now we're going to six sense bases. And where
exactly what form does craving sort of come in, because it's, as it's experienced, it's kind of like a momentum towards some sort of mental object, and would it be sort of in the perception of whatever that object is, that, and then by, you know, wide reflection or whatnot, sort of turning the perception towards a more perception in line with how things actually are, and that sort of cuts off the craving, or is the craving sort of, there's the five khandhas, and then the craving is this separate action that then...
I wouldn't try to break it down that closely. You're creating suffering just in that, just at that level. But it's more like Ajahn Chah, sort of say, like, because, you know, people get, like dependent origination, there's all these causal processes sort of lining up, and Ajahn Chah sort of said, yeah, it's there are all these different processes and pieces to the to that causal linkage, but he says more like looking on it as if you're falling down from a tree, and you don't have to count the branches as you go down. You just have to know that when you hit the bottom, it's going to hurt. And so that in the same way, that recognition of, okay, I get entangled in, you know, the sense process, the senses, or in the aspect of khandhas, and there are all, certainly there are all of that, but that's, and it comes up a few times where it's emphasized that these, the khandhas are conjoined, they're not disjoined, so that one puts a label on it in order to sort of see the process a bit more clearly, but it's all happening at the same time. So that one is using these different templates to investigate and understand more clearly how we do get caught by it, how we do fall for that fetter, so these are looking on it as all helpful tools of come approaching from different ways.
Yeah, I was just thinking too, like with the fire sermon, desire, hatred, delusion arise on everything.
Yes. Yeah.
It can arise on the object, it can arise on the organ, it can arise on the conscience, it can arise on anything.
Yeah, the feeling arising dependent of both. Yeah.
There's that, there's a sutta where it's explained where desire is like, I think it's compared to heat to a flame. Just like the khandhas, so heat is, it's not the flame, but it's also not separate from the flame.
Right.
Just like desire is not the khandhas, but it's not separate from the khandhas.
Right.
Or I might be mistaken, might be like water and wetness.
Yeah, but those are, you know, it's important to sort of see that sense of being all of a piece, but still possible to understand the process and free the mind from the tendency to desire and clinging. Okay, so I went through the Salayatana Wagga, and there's all sorts of great suttas in here. And I had to kind of be a bit parsimonious in my selections, because there was some really good ones. And the whole first 60 suttas or 50-60 suttas are a series of suttas relating the impermanence, the dukkha, non-self nature of the sense bases, external, internal, goes through the theme of gratification, danger, and escape with the sense bases, internal and external. And so I'm not going to bother to There's some good ones in there, but we've covered that really well with the khandhas. But it just taking into note that that's just because I'm not reading them, that whole structure of investigation around anicca, dukkha, anatta, the gratification, danger, and escape are applies in the same way as to the khandhas. You know, and I'll touch on it in other ones. But then I think the first sutta that I want to bring up is a. It's in that first 50-60 suttas, and it's Sangyutta 35, sutta number 26. And Asavati. Bhikkhus, without directly knowing and fully understanding the all, without developing dispassion towards it and abandoning it, one is incapable of destroying suffering. And what, bhikkhus, is that all, without directly knowing and fully understanding which, without developing dispassion towards, and abandoning which, one is incapable of destroying suffering. Without directly knowing and fully understanding the I, without developing dispassion towards it and abandoning it, one is incapable of destroying suffering. Without directly knowing and fully understanding forms, eye consciousness, eye contact, and whatever feeling arises with eye contact as condition, without developing dispassion towards it and abandoning it, one is incapable of destroying suffering. Without directly knowing and fully understanding the ear, the nose, tongue, the body, the mind, and sort of all through those, and whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition, without developing dispassion towards it and abandoning it, one is incapable of destroying suffering. This, bhikkhus, is the all, without directly knowing and fully understanding which, one is incapable of destroying suffering. Bhikkhus, by directly knowing and fully understanding the all, by developing dispassion towards it and abandoning it, one is incapable of destroying suffering. And what, bhikkhus, is that all, by directly knowing and fully understanding which, by developing dispassion towards which and abandoning which, one is capable of destroying suffering? By directly knowing and fully understanding the I, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the body, the mind, and whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition, by developing dispassion towards it and abandoning it, one is capable of destroying suffering. This, bhikkhus, is the all, by directly knowing and fully understanding which, one is capable of destroying suffering. Kind of the all is that philosophical kind of a positing of a kind of some kind of super mundane thing or other that tends to be exalted and turns into some, you know, something mystical or whatever. God is another one, could use the word. And you realize, and in terms of the Buddha's really bringing the responsibility of our developing responsibility or possibility of taking responsibility of freedom from suffering through understanding these senses, sense bases, sense contact, sense consciousness, feeling that arises independent of sense consciousness, and by doing that, one can free oneself from suffering, free oneself from any kind of limitation that leads to a sense of lack of liberation. So, okay.